This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 6th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 363. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, the North Shore Wastewater Treatment Plant, a $3 billion cost overrun scandal, why it's a province-wide problem, and why it needs to be a ballot box issue in the October 19th BC election. My guest is Daniel Anderson, spokesperson for the North Shore Neighborhoods Alliance. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Among the things I've covered closely since launching the Breaker.News in 2017 is the North Shore Wastewater Treatment Plant. Some of BC's biggest media outlets only discovered this troubled Metro Vancouver project in the middle of spring break in 2024. That's when Metro Vancouver Commissioner Jerry Dobrovolny revealed that it would cost almost $4 billion and take until 2030 to complete. He blamed inflation and the original builder, Acciona. It should have cost $700 million and opened in 2020. But Metro Vancouver and Acciona couldn't get along before the pandemic, and it only got worse afterward. They're now suing each other. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and BC Premier David Eby have mostly stayed on the sidelines despite the $400 million in funding agreements from more than 7 years ago that give senior governments the power to investigate the cost overruns. North Shore ratepayers are facing a $600 a year increase in their tax bill. A citizens group is demanding answers and warning other British Columbians that they're going to be paying more for this boondoggle. Joining me on this edition of the podcast, Daniel Anderson, spokesperson for the North Shore Neighborhoods Alliance.
We have eight community associations from West Vancouver and the District of North Vancouver. We reached out to associations in the city and have yet to have any join. The organization originally came about as both myself and a resident of the District of West Vancouver, David Marley, met together. And we had similar concerns to the ones you've mentioned, namely that North Shore taxpayers were on the hook for an ever-growing bill. And not only was the bill itself a problem, but the fact that what led to it, those problems, they seem to have not been addressed and they have remained persistent. So our thought was that we needed to get together with local residents and put pressure on both municipalities to raise their voice to the province, but also to speak to provincial hopefuls as the election came forward, and potentially even federal hopefuls as the federal election seems to be looming in its own way lately. And our thought was is that we needed a public independent inquiry into what had gone wrong here, given that more and more infrastructure projects are popping up around the province, and all of them seem to be running quite a bit over budget, which tells us that something's going wrong when it comes to Metro Vancouver operations. So I'm not gonna list through each and every community organization, but we've got a number that have been from the kind of Edgemont area. We've got the British Properties, we've got Ambleside in there. We got Seymour. So we've got a wide array of groups that are coming together, and they're saying this is a kind of like the groups of Rohan and Lord of the Rings. We need to all come together because we got a bigger issue on our hands, and we need to have a coalition's voice speak to this matter.
Yeah, this in many ways is the tipping point of affordability. You know, people who already pay property taxes in the North Shore especially are paying for the operation of the local governments. They're paying for the operation of schools. They're paying for the upkeep of roads and parks and recreation centers. And now this. And if this isn't solved, it's going to have a cascading effect on other hopes and dreams for infrastructure improvements in the years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're putting your finger on the exact right issue, which is that we've seen this massive influx of population, especially into metropolitan areas, and that's come with federal policy. But as these municipalities grow in size, of course, you need the infrastructure to support them. And we've got this weird situation where this creature of the province, Metro Vancouver, was built to manage these infrastructure projects that affected multiple municipalities. But the management of that organization of Metro Vancouver seems to have gone off the rails in some ways. And our group's position is simply to say, can we find out what's going on here? Can we figure out, is this a problem with the governance model? Is it a problem with how the contracts are being constructed? I know you've touched on that before. And when there's these massive cost overruns, as we've seen with this project at the North Shore Wastewater Treatment Plant, we can't simply say that now there's a premium on people living in this region for the next 30 years. We're talking about people's kids, their grandkids. We're talking about what could be index funds dedicated towards people's kids' education. These are large sums of money, and the answer we're being given is tough. Costs are rising, inflation is happening, costs of construction and supplies are going up. We're being given all these kind of what's the word, prepackaged answers to this problem. But what we're recognizing is that it's unsustainable, and unless we get a handle on the problem, it's only going to get worse.
How is it going to affect you? What's your estimate for your bill increase?
We have yet to get concrete numbers. That's another issue, right? So we're getting told this number of 590. Some people are saying that's going to be tied to property assessments. That's West Vancouver's plan at the moment. There was even uncertainty about whether this was going to go into utility bills and be non-deferrable, or whether it was going to be something like taxes where you could pay it off in installments if necessary. But the uncertainty around the issue is growing because we've got this figure for the next 30 years of 590 that's been thrown around. It doesn't include decommissioning the old site. It doesn't include soil remediation. It doesn't include the cost of the civil action launched by Acciona against Metro Vancouver. So we've got this confluence of factors leading to a big question mark when it comes to what people are actually going to have to pay. And that's causing lots of anxiety and worry in the residents of North Vancouver. So I'm sure not ready for whatever surprise comes in my bills in the next few years. And my plan and our association's plan here is to see that we've got some support from our federal and provincial partners so that it's not this massive sum that's coming on to everyone's bills once a year, because it's going to be a premium for living in North Vancouver, and we're probably going to see an exodus. In fact, we've seen reports from many people across BC in terms of affordability saying we're going to Alberta, we're going elsewhere, because this is an unaffordable province to live in. And we need to change that because fundamentally we want families to be able to prosper here and to flourish and to remain in the place that they call home.
Now, Metro Vancouver will look at doing an audit. They've hired John Hunter, former Court of Appeal judge, who was a well-known criminal defense lawyer for many, many decades. He's going to try to find the terms of reference, try to find an accounting company or auditor to do the job, while at the same time not step on the toes of the lawyers who are involved in the Acciona counter lawsuit. Is that satisfactory for your group?
No, it's not. And here's the problem, right? We're actually just putting together a news release coming up for this week, and one of the problems has been that we've got these terms being thrown around, right? They're kind of, again, prepackaged responses. So we've got transparency, you hear that word all the time. You got independent. The issue is that the devil is in the details when it comes to this stuff. So let's go through the history of it, right? Initially, we hear that EB's kind of saying, well, maybe we should do an audit. Funny that he's got all of these tools at his disposal and he's kind of pondering as if maybe someone should do something. Then we've got this replacement of the chair of Metro Vancouver. He tries to throw his friend in to do the review. Everyone says, whoa, 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 conflict of interest. And now we've got, as you pointed out, something that they're calling an independent review, but there's a bunch of areas that you can't touch because of civil action. And that's precisely the worry, is that we need the inconvenient questions to be asked. And fortunately for us, there is a solution on the books. It comes in 764 of the Local Government Act. It's an inspector of municipalities. And in their capacity, they're able to come in, they're able to actually put a halt to metro operations if they need to, look into the books, do a full public independent review, and actually field questions from the public. And let me tell you, one of the things that I see in the email inbox of the North Shore Neighborhoods Alliance is plenty of people from the public that have been involved in the project, are experts in the area, and they've got inconvenient questions that Metro needs to answer. And one of the things, a common kind of counter argument that gets fielded is, well, you really don't want to slow things down any more than they've already been slowed down. And that's such a short-sighted argument. It's myopic. Because the fact is that if Metro Vancouver continues to have these cost overruns on other projects, continues to write up contracts that put taxpayers, local taxpayers, on the hook for these massive overruns, then this isn't the end of the story. So really, we can't rush this surgery. We need to get someone in there who's capable of issuing subpoenas, capable of bringing the bureaucrats that were involved at the time to the table. And yes, that might be uncomfortable for the government that's presently in power. We know that there's a lot of individuals connected to the NDP right now that were in local government when this occurred. But the fact is that the public deserves answers because these are our taxpayer dollars. And we need to have faith and assurance from Metro Vancouver that we're in good hands. And I don't believe anyone on the North Shore believes that right now. And as distrust in institutions and government continues to grow, people are looking for solutions. You can see them looking for it everywhere. But the fact is that there's an easy place to start. You've got a tool on the books that was used when municipalities went bankrupt in the 1930s. It's called the Inspector of Municipalities, and they're there to jump in when things are going wrong, and they are going wrong.
Metro Vancouver is a creature of the province. And I find it interesting for the NDP government. They got involved to impose a solution in Surrey to the policing issue, to make the Surrey Police Service, the new municipal force, the police force of jurisdiction by the end of November this year. They also gave City of Surrey money to pay the higher costs of policing after they get rid of the RCMP. Province-wide, the NDP government has also gotten involved from a housing standpoint to take over many aspects of housing legislation and regulation, take it away from municipalities. But they haven't done the same with Metro Vancouver. It seems like an interesting conflict, especially in an election year. It makes you wonder why.
Yeah, and you know what? The thing is that as tempting as it is to speculate in these cases, and naturally we do it. You say, okay, what's exactly going on here? Is there something fishy happening behind closed doors? The fact is that we don't know. And that's why independent public reviews are so important, because they bring everything out into the open, and that's good for everyone. Because otherwise, the worst case scenario comes to people's minds. They say, is there corruption here? Is there nepotism here? What's going on? So really what we need is we need someone independent in full view of the public to say, okay, here's what Metro Vancouver is doing, and here's perhaps some recommendations for reform. I completely agree with you. I think it's a bit bizarre that the premier, who just merely needs to call upon his cabinet to enact this solution has been so reluctant to, and right in the midst of election season. Just yesterday, we actually saw Rustad come out, and I'm surprised it took his party so long, saying if we get into power, we are happy to conduct an independent review. But again, that word independent, the devil's in the details. What does Rustad mean? What's that going to look like? And how is that going to be more robust than what's happening right now within Metro Vancouver?
What kind of response are you getting one-on-one with the people in power at the different levels of government?
Yeah, so let's start with municipal before I get to the MLAs. So municipally, we've seen that the city of North Vancouver, as you know, there's two cities within North Van. There's the district and the city. The city put forward a motion in June, I believe it was June 17th, calling upon their mayor to write asking for an independent review. And that's a great first step. In terms of West Vancouver, we saw a lot of reluctance and pushback from the municipal councillors in putting forward a motion, but they have offered at least a potential solution in terms of how they're going to deal with those costs within their municipality. They've suggested it would be tied to property assessments, and the details are forthcoming there. With regard to the district, we did have a motion forthcoming that was meant to happen in September, but it was kicked to November by the councillor bringing it forward. But interestingly enough, where we're seeing the most activity is actually outside of North Van, where Daniel Fontaine and a number of other municipal councillors brought forward special motions to their councils asking for precisely what our coalition has been asking for, which is Section 764 of the Local Government Act to be used because it seems appropriate under these circumstances. In terms of MLAs, our organization reached out in July looking for comment. We did get a response from John Rustad. Rustad basically said that funds would be contingent upon the outcome of a full independent review, which we fundamentally think makes sense. There's no point pouring money down a sieve if it's not going to go anywhere. It's just being poorly managed by Metro Vancouver. Don't just give more money. That's financially responsible. The issue has been that there's been such a delay in a call for that review and the details of what that review ought to look like. In terms of the MLAs responding, I haven't heard anything from Bowen Ma, Susie Chant, Corinne Kirkpatrick. We've heard a little bit back from some of the conservative MLAs, repeating what Rustad has said. It's good to see some action picking up around this because I really do think, and I guess time will tell, I think this is an election issue when it comes to North Shore residents. I think what we're really saying is it's not just about the party leader. It's about the ridings themselves, the concerns of individuals living within those ridings. And for North Vancouver, our residents are looking at this massive bill, 3 decades that it's going to be spread across. And we're saying, no, we actually need someone to go to bat for us. We need someone to represent us. And it's important that this doesn't get swept under the rug because this is the time to act. This is the time to actually signal that you're here for the residents of North Vancouver, and West Vancouver for that matter. And we're really hoping that that the messaging gets a little stronger as the election approaches.
One final question. On a long-term basis, to prevent this from happening again at Metro Vancouver, should there be a major governance review, if not a full change in the way it's governed? Should there be direct elections for the directors of Metro Vancouver, who right now are essentially just seconded there by their councils?
Yeah, it's a huge question. So I'll talk about maybe the horribly funny part of this, which is that a lot of municipal politicians are making more money working for Metro Vancouver as their side hustle than they are in their own municipalities. It's a lot of money that they get for sitting in these meetings and filling these positions. And it's hard not to see it as a conflict of interest, even if on paper it's not. There's also, as you point out, the issue of representation here is that there's some democratic oversight, but it seems like that democratic oversight is insufficient in terms of preventing some of these cost overruns that we've seen. I guess our coalition's position at this time is it'll be interesting to see if we can actually get a robust public independent review, what the findings are, because in some ways we're in the dark right now. There's that pending civil action between Acciona and Metro Vancouver. We're worried a lot's going to get hidden behind non-disclosure agreements, and Our thought is the sooner the better, because if we can get some information on what's actually going on here, perhaps we'll hold up the possibility that a lot of the problems, especially in this one project, came from who was contracted, Acciona. That's a possibility. It's also possible, as you point out, that we need to fundamentally review what's going on in terms of the governance structure. But both of those are welcome if that's what needs to be fixed. The fact is that government is iterative. We're trying to create the best system we can, and it's not a perfect system. And the only way that we do that is by saying what's working and what's not. And that requires a bit of humility on everyone's part and saying, okay, let's fix what needs to be fixed and keep what's working. So hopefully we get some answers on this.
So thank you again for joining me on the Breaker.News podcast. Daniel Anderson, spokesperson with the North Shore Neighborhoods Alliance. It's a coalition of eight North Shore community associations over the North Shore Wastewater Treatment Plant, which is going to cost at least $3.86 billion, and it'll take until 2030 to build. That's according to the current schedule. That's 10 years late. It was supposed to be ready in 2020 for $700 million. Many questions remain, and people want answers. And a postscript. Metro Vancouver directors are paid $525 for the first 4 hours of a meeting. If the meeting goes over 4 hours, they automatically get double the pay, $1,050.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Taiwan DPP lawmaker Huang Ji makes Time 100 Next list. Huang is Taiwan's youngest lawmaker, just 31 years old, also a member of the LGBTQ community. The lawmaker has spoken out on behalf of underrepresented groups. She featured on the list of leaders along with the Prime Minister of Thailand, the president of Ecuador, the governor of Kentucky, and Laura Trump, the daughter-in-law of former U.S. President Donald Trump. In ABC News Australia, more Australians expected to be displaced by flooding, fires, and cyclones as national urban footprint grows. Over 20,000 Australians displaced by natural disasters every year. The cost of recovering from 13 separate disaster events that occurred across the Sunshine State since September last year is currently estimated at more than $2.5 billion by the Queensland Reconstruction Authority. In Hong Kong Free Press, Taiwan deports two Chinese nationals over harassing Hong Kongers' demonstration on National Day. One of the mainland Chinese deported by Taiwan tried to tear down a flag displayed by Hong Kong exiles and bearing a popular protest slogan. Taiwan has become home to a large Hong Kong diaspora since the protests and unrest in 2019 and the ensuing crackdown on political dissent in the city by Beijing, which claims the island democracy as part of its territory. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, a professional pickleball league is starting in Portland. Spectators will see that it's a totally different game at the pro level. Jason Bach is captain of the Rose City Riverhawks, one of the four teams, including the PDX Puddle Jumpers, Bridgetown Brewers, and Stumptown Grinders. And while the sport is famously popular with retirees, the ages of the PPL players range from only 17 to the mid-40s. Many of them, including Bach, came to pickleball from the high-level tennis world. Bach recruited mostly from the Portland area, though there are some players from Central Oregon and Washington. In Investigate West, over half of sexual assault cases in Washington's King County end in plea deals. Of the minority of sex crimes that result in convictions, 60% end with guilty pleas to lesser offenses, leaving survivors disillusioned with the process. This can mean that victims lose certain legal protections. When defendants plead down to a non-sex offense, for example, sexual assault no-contact orders are terminated and the perpetrator doesn't register as a sex offender. And in the Breaker.News, read these stories. With election in sight, NDP demanded Surrey City Hall keep policing truce secret. And review, no clear winner in first of two BC leaders' debates. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Go visit me there too. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to librarians and all the other folks who work at libraries around BC. Thank you for what you do at what has been called the People's University. That's because October is Library Month in BC. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 6th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 6th of October in 1987, Fiji became a republic? The South Pacific nation became independent from the United Kingdom back in 1970. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Come visit thebreaker.news there too. And you can sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.